That Newsome, wonderful choice of music for that break. This is Les Salzman. We're with Steve Wolf and Scott Miller on the International Equine Network. Folks, ready for the second half of our show. And we were talking about million-dollar horses. Steve, last week there was a million-dollar race and a heck of a card at Yonkers. And tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it was this past Saturday at Yonkers Raceway, and the racetrack in the Standardbred Owners Association of New York held the 47th annual International Trotting Feature, or International Trot as it's called, featuring 10 outstanding trotters from around the globe. Then they were racing for a purse of $1 million, and it was great to see such top pre-publicity for the event. Even a story in the travel section of Forbes magazine telling people that this was the spot for fine dining and exciting harness racing over the weekend. And on Saturday, Italy's Zaccone Go and driver Roberto Piccioni easily opened up after the good trotting mare Atlanta had quit on the lead, and they went on to win by four lengths. It was a mile and a quarter, 2:24.1. Slide So Easy was second, and Marion Marauder from Canada was third. It was a classic race, perhaps the most exciting winner's circle we've seen in a while, because the Italians are very into their racing, and they were picking up the trainer and the owner and the driver and lifting them up in the winner's circle and carrying them around. The horse himself, Zaccone Go, he's just a four-year-old. He picked up his 12th straight win after 11 straight victories in Italy. He's trained by Hogert Elhart for owner Franco Giuseppe, and the four-year-old son of Rudy Griff boasts 21 wins in just 30 career starts, and now he's made nearly $1 million in earnings.
And it was so impressive because when you looked at the past performances going into the race, there were horses from everywhere. You know, it wasn't just Italy. It wasn't just France. It was from everywhere. And that's got to bring a lot of excitement to the sport.
It is. I mean, Finland, Denmark, the horse from Switzerland, which you don't see very often, the top trotter from Germany. They were all there. And it really made for a great international race.
You know, Steve, one of the things that really impressed me also was they started varying some of the distances. And that's one of the things that you hear from so many people. You know, every race looks the same. But now when you're going, you know, you have your mile races and you're going a mile and a quarter, you know, it adds a lot of variety to the card.
Well, it's been needed in the sport in America for some time. The Europeans down under, Australia, New Zealand, they all embrace it with open arms. And you rarely see a race that goes a mile. That's like a sprint race to a lot of these horses. Yet here in North America, with the exception of Yonkers, who has done a number of distant races, everybody stays at a mile. And you're right, it shakes things up. It really, you know, the thoroughbreds, of course, they do it all the time. But I think it really needs to get done by a lot more tracks in order to be effective.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as a secondary aspect to that, if you had varied distances, you probably increase your breeding base because you can breed for the flat mile, or you could breed for the mile and a quarter or mile and three-eighths or whatever these racing secretaries are going to write. But I think it's very exciting to watch these horses, and it makes handicapping a whole different thing to do.
Exactly, And our thoroughbred counterparts, you know, they do it all. And I can even make an exception, but over in Europe, down in Australia, New Zealand, even Ireland and the UK, they all race on the grass. There's nothing, you know, the turf racing. And it's not just for Monty events. It's for the regular events. And considering that so many tracks have an infield, you know, have a turf course for when they do thoroughbreds, it would, to me, seem unnatural to put the trotters on the turf. Also, as you just said, it makes for all different handicapping great situations.
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, these things start taking hold in the industry. Hey, Steve, we've got a caller, and I understand our caller is a thoroughbred person who has a question about standardbreds. Sandra, are you on the line?
I'm here.
You're live in the air.
Okay, right. Good to know. the standardbred horses, they make good sport horses, right?
Yes, they make excellent sport horses. In fact, yes. I remember that one, a standardbred who had made over $100,000, had a great record, and then had a breakdown. He couldn't race anymore. And a lady picked him up and trained him to dressage, and he was used and sent to Seoul, Korea for the Olympics as an also eligible, just in case.
That's outstanding. We here at TBSHcares.com, Thoroughbred Sport Horses, we retrain and rehome many thoroughbred horses, but we also are so interested in finding out more information on the standardbreds. I know that they can make, I've heard the same thing, that they can make good sport horses, and that's why I did want to ask you that question.
The best thing I can recommend would be to, and you can Google these, they're easy. There's a number of organizations out there, and all you have to do is call them up. I'm sure they'll help you. One of the biggest ones is New Vocations. They're located in Ohio. Then there's the Standardbred Retirement Foundation in New Jersey. They do great, wonderful things. There's also AdoptAHorse.org, and they cover all breeds. But, yes, the Standardbred is one of the most versatile racing competitive horses there are out there. They can be trained to jump, to do dressage, to do basic pleasure horse riding, western cutting, barrel racing, you name it. The horse is pretty much built to be able to handle it all. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. Jim Latanzio here, too. On this standardbred issue, what... If you know or can give me a little bit of a insight here, about what age do they look to finish up their racing careers? Are there any? Because we've gone over to Red Mile and watched them run, and of course you look through the condition books, and some of the horses they get up there in age a little bit. But is there any kind of a figure as to when they should actually finish up racing?
The United States Trotting Association requires all standardbred horses, when they turn age 15, that they can no longer compete in what is considered paramutual events. They can do exhibition events after the age of 14, but once they turn 15, it's mandatory retirement.
Okay.
Just my thoughts is because there's not a rider on them, because they're pulling instead of having a rider on them. It's less weight on their back.
It's a whole different dynamic.
Exactly.
And don't forget, they're going a little bit slower than the thoroughbred. So that has a lot to do with it as well.
The standardbred is also built for, I don't want to say longevity in life, although a lot of them do make it into their late 20s and early 30s. We had one even actually almost made it to age 50. But it's the fact that they have more of a hind quarter to them. They have a little more weight, and the disbursement on their legs is less than their thoroughbred and quarter horse components. So they're much sturdier, and you know, thus able to be on the road, whether under saddle or pulling a wagon or cart.
Well, I understand that they also have a wonderful temperament, that they're easy to train, easy to work with.
Yes.
I like their build. I think that they can kind of fit into the warm blood look. That, you know, for the folks that like warm blood, but they would like to have not a warm blood. So I like their look. I like their bone structure, their build.
Well, what I want to tell you guys is, please, they'll give you my email or my phone number when we're done speaking today, and you contact me, and I'll personally introduce you to some of the leading people in the industry that do pressure work and who let the dogs out. And I'll personally introduce to some of the people who can give you a better understanding, and because they're actually out there doing it and competing with them. And there's a lot of shows taking place all over where there's harness racing. They're having competitive shows now for standard bred breeds.
So, you know, here is what we've done, just you know, very, very low key, but we're actually by numbers, we're actually the largest transitioning self-funded business in the country for thoroughbreds. We transition and rehome and more thoroughbreds than any other organization, including some of the larger thoroughbred not-for-profits. And we're business people. But we understand marketing, and we've got a model here that is just extremely successful. And if you go out, like I said, it's tbshcares.com. We've developed a model here for transitioning these horses, and we've always, you know, we support racing, we support training, we support people. As a matter of fact, I just filed the paperwork for the U.S. Thoroughbred Foundation, and I'm going to head up the foundation, and John Court, world-renowned jockey, John Court has agreed to come on board as vice president, and actually Scott Miller down in Florida here, he's on the board. I don't know if you remember Scott, but I asked you a long time ago, so you're on the hook, buddy. And we just filed for the 501(c) status, but we are extremely interested in, you know, duplicating this model that we have for standardbreds. Like I said, we've always gone over to Red Mile, and, you know, I've met some of the key people over there. But our model works, and as a matter of fact, John Court called us last night because we told him, but he's going to be racing today, so he's a little busy. But he's of the opinion, and why he came on board with our new foundation, he agrees that, you know, thoroughbreds, rehoming is better than retiring. And
well, I think that's excellent. And I want to wish you guys all the best. And I can guarantee you that we will have more shows with you guys on it talking about retired racehorses, because it's one of the hottest topics there is right now in the horse business. And I can promise you, whatever it takes to break a thoroughbred or a quarter horse, it's going to be half the time and effort with a standardbred.
Yep.
But you guys, thanks for calling, and we appreciate it, and we appreciate all callers to the show.
Okay, and if you could get us that information on the you know, the fellow that the standardbred guy, we'd appreciate it less.
You got it.
Great.
Take care.
Thanks for the call, guys.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hey, Steve. To get back to what we were talking about this past weekend, and now this sets things up going forward for the Grand Circuit and the Breeders' Crown.
Oh, it does, and the Breeders' Crown is going to be sensational this year, except we do have to give a note. Two horses who were hopefully expected to be in the Breeders' Crown have ended up going into retirement, and one of those is the Pacer, world champion, Lather Up. Apparently something happened after his last race. He's been retired to stud duty as the co-fastest harness horse ever in the history of sport with a record of 1 minute 46 seconds at a mile. And also on the I was a pacer, lather up. And on the trotting side, Pinkman, the 2015 Hamiltonian winner, who went on to Europe with great success, then came back here, was hopeful to consider for the Breeders' Crown, but he has now been retired and will be standing in Ohio.
That's so interesting, right? Here's one of the best trotters of his generation, and he's going to be standing in Ohio. Just a few years ago, nobody that lived in Ohio wanted to stand in Ohio. Why has there been such a change?
Well, it's primarily because of the proliferation of slot machines at the racetrack. And Ohio did, they worked with their government, their governor, actually, and the powers that be to give a very good split of funds to the horsemen's organization, not just for overnight and stake purses, which is important, but for marketing and for publicity and for on-track promotions and things, which the tracks are doing with great success. And because of that, Ohio's become the hotbed. When a race secretary opens the entry box, you know, most of them hope to have 130, 140 horses entered. They have 250 horses entered. And their breeding program and outlook for the future is outstanding. So their yearling prices are selling better, and more stallions want to stand there.
And the broodmare band, from what, as a casual observer, what I'm seeing is the broodmare band that's in Ohio is so much better than it was even 3 years ago. You've got some real quality race mares that are being bred to these stallions.
That's right, and it's only going to increase. As the sale comes up, the very big one up in Harrisburg, if you watch how the brood mares and look at the names of the people buying them, and you're going to see a lot of Ohio addresses there. I mean, it's sort of like a dominoes in reverse. I mean, they're all stacking up, and you know, the outlook, of course, for Ohio is very, very good. You know, making it competitive with New York and Pennsylvania, and you know, it's great. It's great to see, because Ohio has never had this opportunity. I mean, I can remember purses at some of the tracks, you know, that were outrageously low, and now, plus, Ohio also has one of the biggest fair racing programs in any of the states in North America. So they also, you know, they're looking for horses. So there's different avenues for racing opportunity, and you want to have good brood mares to breed to these horses and get that great speed.
Now, their fair racing program has always been tremendous and has a tremendous history. But going back to what you were just saying, you know, it wasn't that long ago that when you were racing in Ohio, you were racing for $750. Now,
right,
that's not the case, obviously.
No, not at all. But
now, the horses that are surviving and going forward, tell us a little bit about what you're looking at and who's your under the radar type of horse.
Now's a little tougher time because of the Breeders' Crown. I mean, there's the top horses we're going to see. They'll start this Friday night with the eliminations. The purses in 2 weeks for the finals are over $6 million, but you have some sensational two-year-olds that are racing, and they're actually undefeated. The trotting colt, Real Cool Sam, who's going Friday night, he's undefeated. Tall Dark Stranger, the two-year-old pacing filly, she's great and undefeated. And then we're going to see some of the best matchups there are in racing when horses like three-year-olds Better's Wish and Southwind Ozzy, and they tangle up in the three-year-old colt division, plus Captain Crunch and some others. In fact, the racing in America has gotten so strong, the Breeders' Crown is so strong, that they have attracted the greatest stallion, racehorse stallion, in all of Europe, is coming over by the name of Bold Eagle. And he'll be making his first North American appearance. And this is a horse, his father was a multiple world champion, and Bold Eagle has done more than his father did in his racing career.
Now, for a lot of people, that you know, the Breeders' Crown is a little bit different than the Breeders' Cup. Why don't we just talk a little bit about the process itself?
You know, go right ahead.
We start this week, and just bring us all the way to the creme de la creme.
Okay, well,
I can't believe I used a French phrase on radio. Oh, geez, what's going on?
That's okay. The Breeders' Crown is, of course, the stake races that you start making as, you know, as horses are born and they grow up, and the fees go higher and higher as it comes forward. But then as you get closer to race time, there's, of course, those that aren't eligible that can be supplemented, but there's conditions there. There's quite a few conditions to keep these horses eligible and to keep on racing. But if you are one of the best horses, you can also receive a bye and not have to go in an elimination race, which I think that is unique, and it's also sort of a special reward if you're the best of your class.
And who determines that bye?
That's determined by Money One and Stake Races One, and they are set rules with the Hamiltonian Society, Breeders' Crown Society that governs and runs these races.
And so some of these horses that have moved up the ladder and now have gotten to the top of their class, they are getting a bye, and they're going to go in maybe a little bit fresher, do you think, or does it much matter?
Well, I don't think it much matters. Whether, you know, some horses that get a bye, in fact, if you look at Saturday night's overnight, I know this horse didn't get a bye, but there's two or three horses that didn't have to go in elimination races. This is for the older horse pace. Now, a horse like McWicket, I believe he got the bye, but other horses, they're all racing on Saturday because, unlike a thoroughbred, a standardbred wants to race. They have the ability and stamina to race every 7 to 10 days. And when you have some horses that, you know, they pick and choose the stake races, they don't want to go 3 weeks without a competitive race.
Well, that was my point, is that I guess particularly, you know, with the older horses, they like to be tight and sharp. And the younger horses probably need to be tight, you know, by racing the week before.
Yes. A perfect example is the number one rated harness horse in America is Sharton N. And the N at the end of the name stands for New Zealand bred. Now, this mare was used to racing sometimes twice a week when she started her career. But she's reached a point where, you know, she needs to get, you know, there isn't a race for her every week. And she had gone a few weeks and in Lexington finished second, which there was no shame. I mean, that she lost. It's going to happen. She had won 14 in a row before that. But obviously, you know, I think the trainer, Jimmy King Jr., knew that she might be a little bit short, and that's what happened. And I guarantee you when she races next week in the final, she'll be tight.
Yeah, you know, no matter how you try and score a horse down in the morning, it's not the same as racing.
No, and, in fact, this past Friday, Southwind Ozzy went in a workout by himself at Freehold Raceway, actually went behind the gate. He went a mile on a half in 1:56.3. That would probably be maybe a 52 mile at Mohawk. But, I mean, he needed a place to race. And instead of going against older horses, he just worked them out.
But you remember the old days of the time trials, right?
Sure.
Where you know, these horses would score down at tremendous numbers. This was more of a moderate type of work for him, where he still has a lot left in the tank, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you're right, that the time trials, we actually held one at Freehold with the great Mack Lobel, and he tied the world record, which, you know, it didn't count for anything except for the excitement of seeing a time trial done. But in this day and age of horses breaking the sub 50 barrier, both trotters and of course the pacers, it's a question of having competition, of having someone breathing down your neck so that you know it's time to dig in, as opposed to just going a faster workout.
You know, you're talking about having somebody breathe down your neck and having driven standardbreds myself. You know, people don't realize that that's actually what happens.
Yes, they do.
You know, if you're sitting in the bike, you're feeling the breath.
Yes, it's called racing off the helmet, as they say, because the horse's nose is literally hitting your helmet. And as the drivers, you see them leaning back, you know, they're actually creating a little distance between them and the horse. But there are times when the horse's face is resting on the driver's shoulder as they're heading down the stretch. And I just can't believe that stuff happens. And that's why I'm glad I'm not a driver.
Been there, done that, and it ain't fun. The guys that do that, you know, that do it every night, I guess you get used to it, but I could never get used to it.
No, I can understand that. But all I can tell is if you're a horse fan, then this coming weekend and next weekend, the Breeders' Crown is taking something different. The two-year-olds are racing on Friday night, including the finals next week, and the three-year-old and older horses will be racing on Saturday. So what we're looking at here are 10 and 12 race cards with 95% of the races, all Breeders' Crown events.
And the location?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's at Woodbine Mohawk Park, and that's located in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And they have hosted the Breeders' Crown before, but they have a wonderful facility. It's a 7/8-mile track. And hopefully the weather, you know, it's the only thing because it's fall up there. It's not going to be like Lexington was near perfect the whole, you know, two-week event. But still, sometimes it's not a question of the time of the race. It's a question of who can cross the wire first.
Well, it looks like it's going to be chilly up there. I know people are already wearing their parkas. Let's touch on that for a couple of seconds before we go. That actually is a good thing for many standardbreds. The breed seems to race best in the cold.
Well, yes and no. A young colt on a hot 80-degree sunny day in Lexington is going to fly, whereas I think the mares have a little bit tougher. And I think in the colder weather, of course, the older horses are going to have that stamina built in, but it's the mares you have to watch out for, because for some reason when it gets cold out, they have the ability to race just as fast as the colts and older horses can go.
So now, from a handicapping point of view, and let's give a couple of tips before we go, what do you look for in this kind of World Series type of events where you have horses coming from everywhere?
Yeah. It's what you're going to have to look for is, you know, what trip handicapping. That's what I look for. Who's going to go to the front end? You'll need to see in the first couple races if the front end holds up. That'll depend on the track condition. I personally like closers because the stretch at Mohawk Park is pretty long, and it you know, they're going to have plenty of opportunity down there to come from behind. And I personally like the closers better than the front-end horses. I think horses on the front end are just, you know, it's they can read the clock, the drivers can read the clock and try and rate them as best possible. But I'd rather have a horse coming off cover than being on the front end.
And that track has a nice wide stretch also. So for closers,
yeah,
there are good paths not only on the inside, but on the outside to come down.
Absolutely. And I really think when you look at it, we have 12 divisional races in 2 weeks, and I would say more than half of them are going to be won by horses coming from, you know, off the helmet or off the pace.
Now, before we go, last question. Give us four of your best picks for Breeders' Crown.
Breeders' Crown. Okay.
Who's going to be standing at the end?
My number one pick in the older trot is going to be the horse from Europe, Bold Eagle. I think as long as he is prepared for this race, because he's almost never gone at a distance of just a mile, might have a couple times, it's going to be like a sprint to him. And if people remember when a horse by the name of Sebastian Kay first came over from Sweden and raced here, I mean, he was sensational. He couldn't be beat because he was only racing a mile distance. Other horses to look for, I think Better's Wish is very, very good. That's a three-year-old pacing colt. Of course, McWicked is the class master.
Yes, he is.
Eight-year-old pacer. He's now won two in a row. He gets Brian Sears, feels bad taking him first over and parking him for his life, but the horse thrives on it. And, he's got a really nasty foot that's quarter cracked, and they patch him up. They do a great job. They take super care of him, and he responds by winning races.
He's a brave dude. He's one of my favorites.
Another one to watch out for that has really come alive is Wari Ubruth, three-year-old pacing filly. She is superb, and she's done very well.
So those are your top four?
Yes.
So next time we're on the air with Flying Turns, we're going to check and see how you did.
Okay. Bold Eagle, McWicked,
Better's Wish,
and Wari Ubruth.
You got it. I wrote it down.
Very good, Les. We'll see.
Of course, I'll probably misplace the pad, so you're safe.
Okay. Excellent.
Well, Steve, as always, a pleasure talking with you, and thank you for joining us on Flying Turns. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with another episode. And this is Les Salzman on the International Equine Network wishing you a great day. Thanks again for joining us.